Welcome to the Embrace It series, where women with all types of disabilities can be real, resourceful, and stylish. With each episode, you'll walk or roll away with everyday tips, life hacks, and success stories from community leaders and influencers. So take off your leg braces and stay a while with Lainey and Estella.
Hi, I'm Lainey, and I have CMT.
And I'm Estella, and I also have CMT, a neuromuscular disorder affecting approximately 2.6 million people worldwide.
That's as many as MS. We believe disabilities should never get in the way of looking or feeling good. Both of us wear leg braces and have learned through our own personal journeys to embrace it.
Brought to you by Launchpad 516 Studios, each episode is designed to challenge your own stigmas and beliefs around disability. We want our listeners to get the most value for their time spent with us, so we interview some of the most empowering disability badasses in the world. Through storytelling, personal experiences, and tips, we're all reminded of our own strengths and endless potential.
For more information and exclusive resources, check out our websites at trend-able.com and hnf-cure.org. And don't forget to hit the subscribe button for future episodes and special promos.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Embrace It podcast with Lainey and Estella. Hey, Lainey.
Hi, Estella. Hi, everyone.
Hey, we are back with another episode, and this time we have an amazing self-taught chef. Her name is Alexis Hilliard. Not only is she a self-taught chef, she is an incredible disability advocate living with a limb difference. She is an amazing and fun content creator, which we'll be diving into a little bit more. She's from Canada, Alberta, Canada. And we're so excited to be welcoming you today, Alexis. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we have been following your videos for quite a while, and I find myself cracking up out loud when I see some of the stuff in the videos that you are putting out there and just bringing so much joy, but also at the same time, some awareness. But before we talk about that, let's get started a little bit about living with a limb difference. This is a topic that we have not yet covered, and we're so excited to hear about your journey and your experience. So maybe take us back a little bit about how you grew up living with a limb difference. What was that like for you personally?
Yeah, totally. Well, I guess it started off when I was born, and my parents, it didn't show up on the ultrasound. So my parents were surprised. Everybody was surprised. And I guess my birth was a little bit traumatic because the doctors, as soon as they noticed, they whisked me away and they did a bunch of tests just to see what was quote unquote wrong with me. So my poor mom, I had been whisked away. She didn't get to hold me right away. And my dad eventually went with them and was like, you know what? She's fine. She's just missing a hand, because they were doing all these tests and stuff. And he had some background and training in, psychology and babies and stuff. So he was like, she's okay. So after that initial trauma, things were great. And, my parents, my dad especially, they tried to do a bunch of stuff for me as I was a baby growing up. They thought, oh no, she's not going to be able to crawl, or maybe she won't be able to hold a bottle, or maybe she won't use her arm, and so they put prosthetics on me by recommendation of the doctors and stuff, which I didn't like. It was kind of like putting a t-shirt on a cat. They just sit there and then they fall off the couch, I just kind of sat there like a lump a lot. I remember the feeling of them, and they were I didn't really want or need them when I was 18 months old, but my dad used to I had a mobile over my crib, and he would tie a string from the mobile to my left arm, which is where I have my limb difference. And I call my arm my stump. Not everyone likes that word. I love the word. It's, language is personal. So that's what I used to describe my body. And so he did that so that I would realize that I had an arm that I could control the world with and stuff. But it was very lovely what they did, but it wasn't necessary, because I ended up using it so much. Like on my first birthday, there's a video of me eating my cake and I'm eating icing with my finger and then I'm eating icing with my stump. So I'm actively using both arms all the time. And I think for the most part, that's, you know, a lot of people's experience when they're born with a congenital limb difference, like I was. But of course that depends. And then growing up, I didn't have too many issues with bullying. I had a few, but not too bad. And just people staring and lots of questions. And then the way that my family prepared me for school was really lovely. My sister and my mom and I, we'd play school before I went to kindergarten. And they would be other students or maybe the teacher. And they would practice by like asking questions like, hey, what happened to your hand? Or why do you look like that? Or whatever. And then I could rehearse how to answer that so that when I went into school, I didn't feel overwhelmed with these questions and I could answer them confidently. And I had a good like lexicon and way to describe my body. So that was really, really lovely. And then I don't think I ever had anything physically that I, you know, couldn't necessarily do. Like I always found ways to adapt, but there were definitely some frustrations in my life, like learning to tie shoes. I was really angry about that, but my dad sat with me and showed me how. And I eventually found a way to tie my shoes using my teeth. And I did that for about 3 years in elementary school. And then I learned how to do it using just my stump and my hand. And then I think there was just one time in junior high where I saw a video of myself dancing. And I was in a trio I danced for a lot of my childhood. And I was watching this trio and I was in the middle of these two other dancers. And I realized probably for the first time, really, how different I looked from them. And I just broke down. I just wept in my mom's arms. And I was like, why do I look so different? Why? Blah, blah, blah. Like, because I think I realized for the first time that if and when other people see me and they look at my body and how different I am, that they might think thoughts that I can't control. They might think that I'm incapable, that my parents took a lot of drugs when they were pregnant with me, that like I can't do certain things, or that it's scary. Like just so many things I realized that people can and would probably assume about me. And that just made me feel so uncomfortable. But after just being with my mom and just crying and her just letting me be, I just like got to the other side and I was like, you know what? Oh, well, I love who I am and my family does and my friends do. And so I just kind of got to the other side of that dark part of childhood, I guess. So yeah, that was kind of my, and then like, I have lots of fun prosthetic stories that I can tell as well, but that's kind of how my life was going.
We love prosthetic stories. So I have a quick question for you just out of curiosity. Years ago when I first launched Trendable, a local nonprofit, Lucky Finn, are you familiar with them?
Yeah, I'm actually one of the Canadian ambassadors for Lucky Finn.
So oh yeah, she's great. Mm-hmm. I had coffee with her. She lives down the street from me, but I'm like literally forgetting her first name, who started it. Yeah, Molly. I love her. She's so cute. And but when we were first talking, I remember, and I'm not quoting her, but I got the impression that she, it's her child who has the limb difference, that Ryan. She would associate disability with limb differences. Like, again, I'm not quoting her, but for her, it was just like, you know, she's more focused on like, you know, body differences, but not necessarily identifying as, you know, her child has a disability. Do you find that, like, I know for you, like, what do you think about that? Is that, do you identify as having a disability?
Identify as a disabled woman. And I think there's a couple things about that. I think that language and words are very personal and they're very important. And so however people want to use those words for themselves is great. That's important for the queer community. That's important for the disabled community. That's important for racialized people. It's very important. And so everyone has their own unique journey, but there's a couple of things that I think are happening in general around disability. I think that there's still a sense that to be called disabled is bad, because there's a sense in society that to have a disability that is like, that's not wanted, that's less than, that's scary. That means like just a lot of negative stuff around that word and that construct. And that comes from so many, like such a history of like eugenics and just yucky bad stuff from colonialism and stuff. But, so that's interesting that a lot of people shy away from the word, especially parents for their kids. They say, oh, she's differently abled. Oh, she's super abled. Or like, oh, you know, my kid is like, it's just not a thing that they want to use for a lot of those reasons. And that's fair. However, I think on the flip side, there's a lot of power in the word disability, in many contexts that people can use to talk about the ways in which society and people's mentalities actually do serve to disable people who have non-normative bodies and mental states. And that is important. So using it to look at like how the world is actually structured to literally disable people who don't have the typical able-bodied white male, you know, presence or any variation of that. So for me, I wasn't sure at first when I first got into this work. And as a child, I never heard the word disability related to me as a child. And I never really used it for myself because I didn't really know much about it. But I did know that it was like, you know, it had some negative connotations based on just looking at the world around you. But then as an adult and doing this content creation work and meeting other disabled creators online and realizing that it's actually a point of power and there's such beauty in disabled identities and learning from other people how a disabled person navigates the world, there's so much strength and power. So for me, talking to other disabled mothers, you know, and especially particularly with limb differences or folks using wheelchairs, you know, sharing stories about how other people will look at you and sometimes wonder if you're able to take care of your child. Like I've got a friend who has a limb difference and literally somebody in a mall took her baby away from her as she was trying to help dress with her baby or something. And was like, you need help. Let me help you with this. Like, can you imagine a mother with a under 1 year old child, a stranger picking up that child from you to be like, you need help. Like that is so terrifying.
Oh my God.
That's a lived reality for disabled parents everywhere. And so using that as a talking point, I think is really extremely important. And like, and the question is, why did that person do that? It's because they saw disability and they assumed lack. They assumed bad. They assumed unequipped, unable. Mm-hmm. And so I use the word disability and I talk about that and I am who I am and put my body out there to be like, no, that's not the story that I want to start breaking that narrative. So yeah, it's a big and deep conversation. So I'm glad you asked the question and I understand why some people do shy away from it, but I don't think you have to. I think it's okay to lean into it.
And I think what you're doing really gives people the permission to do that. And when you're kind of rebranding disability and really showing people how you work around, you know, a limb difference, how you're able to do amazing things in the kitchen. I think, you know, the reason I found you was through your channel Stump Kitchen. Mm-hmm. And you have dozens and dozens and dozens of videos here in all different areas, whether it's having conversations with other advocates with limb difference, or you're showing how to make gluten-free recipes in the kitchen. I think it's something that, again, revealing, like pushing away that curtain of what people don't see when it comes to disability, like how we do things in the world, how we're able to function, how we're able to prepare a meal for our family. Mm-hmm. I think all of those just really helps people visualize and understand the capability of someone with any type of disability and how we're able to adapt and work around that. Can you talk a little bit about like how Stump Kitchen was born and how your love for cooking and preparing healthy food and all of that came about?
Yeah. So it came about 7 years ago, maybe. And it really just came from, you know, I had made the decision to become a vegan as after being a vegetarian. And at around the same time, I also was diagnosed with a gluten intolerance. So at the same time, I had a very swift and big diet change. And I was terrified because I was like, I don't really know how to cook. And this is not an easy diet to just like, you know, prepare for or buy for. So I just had to kind of get cooking for myself and learning how. So really it was, you know, my own personal process of like slowly learning vegan gluten-free recipes. And my partner realizing, and myself also realizing, like, holy crap, like I actually really enjoy cooking. Like I would go slow. I would try different ingredients. I would, automatically use my stump as a tool. So to like mash potatoes or to get batter out of a bowl. And my partner was like, that is so amazing how you use your body in the kitchen. Like you should film this. And I was like, huh, all right, let's try it. So she helped me film my first episode. And then I learned, I taught myself how to edit. I think it took me like 10 hours to edit my first episode because I didn't know what I was doing. Oh my gosh, so funny. And then I put it out there for literally just for fun and joy because it made me feel so joyful to watch myself have so much fun. And then after time, I realized I was getting more and more comments from people and parents and folks like me and with kids like me and other disabilities, whatever, just being like, this is amazing. Whoa, my kid wants to cook with you, or like we're trying your cooking technique and this and that, or like, and then I slowly realized after I committed to making a video, you know, a week or trying to anyway, I realized that this was more, less about just me having fun and more important for other people. And quite literally being a point of representation, just like what you were talking about earlier, how, you know, opening that window into different ways of doing things so other people can be like, oh, I see that representation is so important because we don't get that. There's not enough of that, of folks that fall outside the quote unquote norm. And that representation gives folks, you know, like me when I was a kid growing up, I didn't see anyone like me on the news or in the media or whatever. But when I did meet someone like me, it was like amazing.
First of all, you have so many followers. We'll talk about that, but you also like, and we want to definitely get to like the gluten part of what, of your story and talk about maybe for other people, you know, cause gluten free, everything is trending. not just for people who have a gluten intolerance, who's a necessity, but in general, the health benefits. But your posts are so funny, as Estella mentioned. And
thank you.
A lot of them, like, you know, you're making fun of yourself, you know, in a way that's not self-deprecating, but this truly like connecting people and saying like, look, I just do it differently. Mm-hmm. You know, and Estella and I talk all the time about using humor just so that others, not just others with disabilities, but others in the world, you know, it's the common denominator. So like, do you have,
absolutely.
Yeah, but there's a fine line, you know, between self-deprecating humor and, you know, like here, you know, you are different. You're calling, as you said, you're comfortable with the terminology of stump, where other people find that to be insulting. You know, how do you like, I mean, have you gotten like any negative things from people, as you've done your posts and all your videos?
Honestly, no, I haven't had a lot of negativity. I had one person who was also an amputee. I don't know if she was congenital or if she lost her limb later on in life, online saying that she found, like she told me directly online, like that she thought the word stump was offensive. And I was like, yeah, I get that. At first I was like, oh crap. Like I've messed up. Like I've offended all amputees. Oh my gosh. And then I thought about it and I looked and I was like, actually a lot of people call their body their stumps. And I have another friend who, was born missing most of her arm and she's got a little portion of her arm and she calls it her residual limb. And I've had medical professionals talk to me about my arm, like calling it a residual limb. And I cannot handle that word. I don't know why. I just don't like it. Maybe it's too medical. I'm not sure. And my friend loves it. And so then I was like, actually, that's okay. Like if you're offended by it, that's fine. You just don't use it. And I can. And that's it. That's life, baby. So I realized not to take it personally and it was okay. And it was just one person. So I'm sure other people think it.
Yeah,
is.
No, I'm like referring to like, you do these cute, you guys, we want you and we're going to put all the info in the show notes to definitely check out, Stump Kitchen on Instagram and everywhere else. But, like, you know, you draw little faces on your stump with little ears and little whatever. And I would imagine that for some people, they're like, that's the first time I've ever seen someone like doing something like that, where they're truly making fun of themselves, but in a, in a way that is like great and positive and not a negative, you know, thing. It's like, look, like it is what it is. I have a stump. Like, here is my stump.
And it's not, it's like full on costume cosplay. I mean, it's like, it's amazing.
Here's why I don't actually think it's making fun. I actually think it's a form of beautiful self-expression that I've been doing since I was about 4 or 5 years old. So my sister is 2.5 years younger than me. And when she was about 2, 1.5, 2, she really started playing with my arm like a little character. So she was the first person that saw this arm as a character without me doing anything. She saw it as like someone with a little nose or a little ear. And she would start interacting with my arm and calling it like Bebe. She was trying to say baby hand and she said Bebe. So the name Bebe stuck. And so Bebe has been Bebe since I was 4 years old.
So cool.
And from that initial love, she would play with Bebe. She would chew on Bebe. She would like laugh. Then I started putting on little shows for her. I would turn Bebe into a character. And then soon my right hand was named Biggie. Biggie came into the picture. Biggie was the bad guy. Bebe was the good guy. I would put on skits. Sometimes we'd have costumes. She would laugh. My mom used to joke and say, you know, I swear my children have toys. They don't have to play with their arms, you know, but like we loved it. And so from the very beginning, this arm, Bebe, has always been a part of me in terms of like their own personality. So it's always been like this act of love and creativity that came from her. So now as I do these cosplays, I don't think I'd ever really call it something like making fun. I would say it's like this form of self-expression that is using a beautiful and unique part of me to show the world a type of art that no one's really ever seen before. And the emotional chords that I am able to hit with people is incredible. Like I recently did like Bob Ross and, you know, he's passed away. And so a lot of people were very emotionally driven by that. I did the worm from the movie The Labyrinth. That had over 10 million views across all platforms because people are just so like connected to these characters. And so then to see those characters that they've loved since they were little on an arm, on a stump, I don't know. There's something emotional that happens.
And you know what? It's like what? Clearly you are an artist.
We'll be right back.
This is George, Fred, and Jason, the co-leaders of Speak, interrupting to say that we hope you're enjoying this episode, but please make sure to check out our new show, The Speak Podcast, another great show produced by Launchpad 516 Studios. New episodes available every week on all of your favorite podcast platforms.
Each Speak talk is about 6 to 10 minutes in length, and the talks are given in storytelling format. There are 3 key moments in each Speak talk: the moment of truth, the moment of transformation, and the moment of impact. We host pop-up events all over the world, and now we're bringing our talks to your device.
Join us on the Speak Podcast as our speakers step onto the stage and into the spotlight with impactful ideas and stories.
We'll let you get back to the show you were listening to, another great podcast from Launchpad 516 Studios.
You're tuning in to Embrace It with Lainey and Estella, brought to you by Launchpad 516 Studios.
I'm just thinking of people who maybe don't have limb differences, but have other disabilities where they're, you know, covering, hiding, you know, scars, don't want people to see it. And you're doing, you know, the exact opposite. You're using your, you know, your disabled arm as a form of expression that's your own, like totally amazing.
And I think in that case, what I've noticed is the amount of comments that I get and messages in my inbox, I can't really keep up with them, which is both a blessing and a curse. It's wonderful, but it's also harder. I want to talk to everyone, but I will have parents reach out and people reach out. Like I had a person say, you know, I think he was 16 from the States, like, I don't hide my arm anymore because of you. And I'm just like, oh man. And like this 16-year-old dude, like, you know, like so great. And then parents of kids sending me pictures of them, of their little ones with their arms just painted. They've just painted them, like, look, look. And so they're celebrating themselves in these new ways that they, it's almost like, not like I need to give anyone permission for this stuff, but it's like I've opened a gateway for them to be like, there's more joy here and I'm allowed to access it. And so I think it's like, regardless of who you are or what disability you have, or if you're a non-disabled person, I think it's like opening up that door, giving a little permission to be like, yeah, there's more to my body and I can celebrate it in these ways, regardless of your disability status, you know, because the majority of my audience are non-disabled people.
Yeah. You're literally taking something that a lot of people say, don't look here, and you're turning it around and saying, yes, here, look, let's play. You know, this is not a tragedy. This is something positive. This is something we can all connect on. And just,
that's such a great way to put it, Estella. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Because most of society is like, you know, don't look. Like, there's still cultures and countries and places, even in Canada, where people believe if you have a disabled child, don't take them outside. Like, that's a curse. That's not, like, people should not see that. Can you believe that? Like, excuse me. So absolutely. Yeah. Look here. This is okay. So yeah, that's a good way to put it.
And I mean, you know, speaking about the conversations that you're encouraging with your content, I know you have a few other people that make these videos with you, and you have these conversations that I think are really important, because I think that's one of the foundations for our podcast is not everybody has that person in their life that can relate or is also disabled or has a similar disability that they can have these connective conversations with. So tell us a little bit about the conversations you have on your YouTube channel with other individuals with limb differences. What are those conversations like? What are you trying to bring with some of the questions that you're asking there?
Well, I think probably some of the most impactful, like, relationships I've had through the show are with the children that I work with. I mean, some great adults too, of course, but the first time I met Callie, I met her when she was 8 and she's 15 now. And she, her mom found me through Facebook and was like, oh my gosh, wow, let's, you should cook with my kid. And I'm like, okay, let's do it. And she came over and it was winter and she came inside. She had a big coat on and I just looked at her and I was like, oh, winter coat zippers. Am I right? And she was like, yeah, they suck. I hate doing up my zipper. I'm like, yeah, me too. And like, we just got each other immediately. And from then on, it was like this, you know, I don't know, the wall was broken down and we were able to connect in ways that even our parents couldn't connect with us. And my mom was there too. And her mom. And so they got to go meet and chat, and they're friends now. And so that's then cool. Her and I got to go and just play and relate to each other in a way that most people can't. So I think to be able to capture that on screen and to show people that intergenerational mirroring, I guess, I don't know, there's something powerful about that. I think it's helped a lot of people kind of grow into themselves. And for me, it's healed a lot of my inner child. Like, not like I had a lot of healing to do. I had a pretty good childhood, but it's given my inner child that representation that I would have needed. And I think for her, I've just been lucky enough to be the person in her life to, like, when she has an issue at school in relation to her limb difference or in her life, she'll just text me and be like, what do you do about this? And I'm like, yeah, let's talk about that. Like, we just have that sounding board. So I think in all of my guests with a disability or limb difference or whatever, that relational factor, like the way that we're able to relate to each other on just more quickly, perhaps than other people, is a really cool thing to be able to capture. And it's just enriched my life so much.
Let's move to the cooking part. I mean, I don't know anything about cooking. I literally don't cook at all, but I'm interested in healthy eating and anything that can maybe, you know, help me to feel better with my chronic illness and disabilities and whatnot. So you said that you started out as vegetarian, now yeah. You're vegan, and that you are gluten-free out of necessity. Mm-hmm. You know, it's everywhere you see now, everyone is like, is it gluten-free? Is it gluten-free? Like, I only buy gluten-free crackers because all my friends who come over, everyone's gluten-free. Talk to us. I know you're not, you know, we're not asking you to be the expert of nutrition, but like, what have you found to be, you know, why is it a beneficial lifestyle?
So they happened to separate for separate reasons. So the gluten intolerance came, you know, in my adulthood, and I was just experiencing some symptoms like inflammation, GI stuff. And so I had a doctor do an analysis, and that's what came out, and a couple other small food allergies, but that was the main one, not celiac, but an intolerance. So, for me, and I never had this growing up, I was able to eat gluten fine, but then I had a job at a bakery for 2 years. And I think I just had too much. And I think my system was like, what are you doing? Stop this. So I think it just kind of, you know, worked its way. I'm not really sure. I don't know the science behind it, but whatever. So cutting that out really helped with my own inflammation. And now if I do eat gluten, I really feel it. So I just know that for me, my body just feels better without it. Although some wheat, depending on how processed it is or isn't, can be better than others. So I think it has to do with how we process wheat in this culture, but that's a whole other conversation. And then the vegan stuff, my partner, Allison, so she was a vegan, and this was like close to when we started dating. And I was like, I want to be a vegan too. It seemed like a fun challenge. Like I just wanted to for ethical reasons too, of course, but mostly I wanted the challenge because she was vegan. It just made sense if we were going to be living together. So I just tried it, and immediately my body was like, yes. Like it just felt better, stronger, lighter, like not weight wise, but like lighter in my body, you know. I was able to move more. So I think I had like some kind of a dairy thing as well that I didn't realize. So my body just works better on a vegan diet. And that is not the case for everyone. Some bodies love a high fat, high meat diet, and that is okay. Some bodies love low carb, high sugar, low sugar, whatever. Like I think listening to our bodies is key. And I wouldn't have known that had I not tried it, you know? So yeah, I just kind of did it, and I love it. And I love cooking this way. It's not necessarily healthier. I think healthy is an interesting construct. I think it's just, for me, it just feels good and it's fun and I like it.
Yeah. I know it's not healthier because I was going to a vegan restaurant like near me for a while. This was many years ago. And I'm like, oh God, this is so, I was eating these sandwiches that were so healthy and salads with, I don't know, cashews or something. I like ended up gaining 8 pounds. It was, I mean, it was like, it was, my goal was not at that time, like all about my health. It was literally just a aesthetic vein. I wanted to be thinner or whatever. And I'm like, oh my God, it's doing just the opposite.
I know there's definitely some very unhealthy vegans. Like, I mean, my sister went vegan a long time ago and she had done a lot of research, but then there were days where say she was traveling and she was like, what the heck? And so sometimes she would have a bag of chips and half a bottle of wine. And that was her dinner, you know? And it's like, there are lots of unhealthy ways to be vegan and there's lots of unhealthy ways to be a lot of things and healthy ways. So that's the thing.
Mm-hmm. But I do think the idea of like not eating as much processed food, the gluten, certainly with as many, if you're not a cook like you and you're like me, like there's so many things now that, you know, pizza, everything gluten-free that, you know, for the inflammation for people with Charcot-Marie tooth, like Stella and I and any, all types of neuromuscular conditions, having less inflammation in general is good. So,
absolutely.
And I think just the social aspect of being in the kitchen and preparing a meal with someone that you can connect over that experience and have a conversation, and especially as a mom, you know, I think as our kids get older, there's like less and less activities that they may be excited to partake in. But I know my 15-year-old son still is like, whenever food is involved, he's like, usually a yes. So if I can get him to hang out with me for a little while, preparing a meal, I think that's powerful. And food is such a strong connector.
Totally agree. Yeah, you hit on a really good point. And I think that's something that I found by accident through my show, because I wasn't really cooking before it. Oh, I hear my toddler just yelling. My toddler, who's 3, loves to cook as well. So yeah, like finding by accident through my show that like, oh wow, cooking together is such a great point of community and connection. And you have this great task that you're doing together and it has a beginning and an end, and it just feels, I don't know, really great.
What is, so in terms of the tasks, like kitchen tasks, are there any adaptive tools that you use that our listeners, you know, that you would recommend? Like, I know that there's like these rolling knives and other tools, you know, kind of marketed to people with one-handed use. And not necessarily limb differences, but in general, we have hand neuropathy. So, you know, are there tools that you love and you would say, if you're a cook, you need this in your kitchen?
Yes. Okay. So the first one is sharp knives. Keep your knives sharp. Like, we're talking so sharp that if you get cut, you don't feel it. Like chef quality sharp. And you don't need expensive knives. You just need any knife, and you just take it to your local knife shop, or a lot of like other shops will do this too. Like just a sharpening, like a knife sharpening, get them sharp. And then tell your family that you've sharpened your knives. Like, make sure everybody knows that the knives are sharp now, because everybody is used to dull knives. But dull knives are very dangerous because they don't go where you want them to go. So they're unpredictable. You'll try to cut through an apple or a tomato and they'll slip, and that's how you get injured. A sharp knife will go exactly where you want it to go, and it will be very easy. There'll be no resistance as you're cutting. So for me, somebody who has a limited ability to keep something steady on a cutting board, having a sharp knife is like necessary. So it sounds scary, but it's actually much safer. And it's just about how you hold them, and you know, don't put them in the sink, or the, you know, just like wash them and put them away.
Okay.
And I have lots of videos about not necessarily knife skills, but I'm showing how to hold and use a knife when you're cutting an onion or cutting garlic with that safety in mind. So there's stuff on my channel people can watch. The other thing is, underneath your cutting board, if you have a slippery cutting board, just put a damp cloth or a damp tea towel under your cutting board, and it prevents it from sliding.
Because ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah. Like for me, as a person with a limb difference, I use my weight quite a bit, as opposed, because I don't have a grip to hold a vegetable or a fruit, I need to push down, and that's how I keep it steady. So if I'm pushing down and the cutting board slips out, that's extremely dangerous. So putting that wet mat underneath, not wet, but just slightly damp, really helps prevent that slippage. So those two things. Then the last thing I'll say is, I think, well, there's two more things. One, I love to cook with a garbage bowl right next to me, because, you know, if you have a garbage that like has to open like this, it's really tricky to, or like any kind of like garbage underneath the thing. If you have just one hand, it's hard to like get into the garbage and throw things out as you're cooking. Mm-hmm. So I just have a garbage bowl or a compost right there that I can just put my food waste in and not have to worry about it, to kind of keep my area clean. And then the last thing is, I don't really have any adaptive tools other than, there's a certain can opener. I think it's like by Starfrit. It's called the Little Beaver. And it's just the way that it is. It's not necessarily for people with limb differences or whatever, but it's just easier to do. So you just snap it on and you hold it. And then I can kind of turn the dials using my finger in my stump, as opposed to having to hold them in my stump elbow crook and do it like that, because that can get very slippery. Mm-hmm. So there's just, things with bigger handholds and stuff like that. But definitely the knives and the cutting board has made my cooking journey so, so much better.
Yeah. It's those little tweaks that make the difference between like, oh, I'm too like mentally exhausted to even not cooking, because that's, you know, a lot of times it's like, you know, I know with CMT, we're dealing with fatigue, we're dealing with loss of balance and hand weakness and bending down and putting things in the oven and, you know, making sure we don't burn ourselves, making sure we don't cut ourselves. There's a lot mentally and physically involved in preparing a meal. So I love that. Anything that we can do to kind of make that process a little easier and less.
You mean like DoorDash? That makes it a lot easier.
Honestly, that's so true. That's a reality.
Yes, but you know, obviously DoorDash is expensive. Whatever. But that doesn't really stop me. But there's also like some great, you know, getting back to like the gluten-free and the healthy eating, and just even if you're not interested, like I'm not interested in eliminating all cheese, regular,
I am not interested in that.
But you know, like a lot of those meal delivery, especially if people who are listening or live it alone, you know, those meal delivery, healthy meal services that are vegetarian or gluten-free, customize it to your diet, you know, get the ingredients already cut, you get the ingredients already prepped in little baggies. And
and
to me,
and grocery stores are doing that now a bit more.
That's so cooking. You know, and for me, that would be cooking. Like that would be making a meal. You feel a sense of accomplishment at the end that you've put it all together. And
absolutely. And I think those are great for that exact reason. Absolutely. And I do love how sometimes like grocery stores have like butternut squash already cut and cubed for you. Cause like who the heck is going to cut a butternut squash? Not me. Like that. No, thank you. And so like to have that accessible can make, make or break your dinner, you know? So,
100%.
That's a really, really good point.
And now with like air fryers, like I'm so excited to have an air fryer because I feel like it's just so much more accessible than like using an oven and hot trays more cleanup. So for me, that's been a more accessible appliance, just having an air fryer and being able to like do more with that.
So yes, I'm sitting here looking at my air fryer. It's so sparkly and pretty. And Howard, my husband, joked that it could store some shoes, a pair of shoes. We're thinking about like other uses because it's so pretty. But yeah, I get it. The air fryer, the idea of it is amazing because it does, for those people who are unhealthy eaters or frozen eater box, you can take those, you know, fries that are in frozen containers and apparently it makes them taste better. And like,
I gotta get one. I've heard so much good things and I that would be great. If we had more room in the house, I'm sure I'd have all the tools, but we don't have much room, but I'm glad that they work. I will try one day, I'm sure.
Well, we are so grateful that you took the time to share a little bit about, you know, the amazing work that you're doing, to share about your journey and living with a limb difference and sharing your perspective and just shining a bright and fun light on disability and bringing more joy into the world and bringing more awareness. So we definitely want everybody to check out.
And I'm sorry to interrupt, but like really one of the big takeaways from today is I get people all the time who are, you know, debating about showing their leg braces and, you know, as listeners, many listeners know, I don't choose that, but like, if you're someone who like would feel better, you know, doing that, like take this as an example, like you can make anything your superpower, like do it up. Like if you have a prosthetic leg and want to have tattoo covered or show your personality and you can't run yourself, like you can do that. It's all about choice and what we hide from others, like it internally weighs on us. So I'm not saying that everyone needs to go and show their leg braces or things that they're uncomfortable with, but if in your head, it's something that you're like, you know what, if I just show them, then they'll be over it. Like if I just show it, people see it, the mystery is gone. And then it's like, I can just go about just living my life. So I think that's a big takeaway too.
Yeah. Yeah. Or even just maybe you don't want to show your braces and that's totally fair. But if you see somebody else showing theirs, that just gives you a little bit more spaciousness of being like, okay, I see that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not ready yet, but that's cool. You know?
Yeah.
Full permission to think about that and to really take inventory on how much that weighs on you. How much energy are you putting into hiding that part of you that you don't want to see versus how much energy could you save potentially by just showing that and maybe initially being scared and nervous about those interactions at first, but
it's true.
You might be a lot more comfortable in 90 degree weather wearing shorts, you know, and showing your leg braces than having to worry about like hiding that. So it's really
about, and it goes for a cane, a walker, anything, you know, like having those, you know, if it's an accessory that you carry, you know, you could make it your own and it'll feel like better for you because you're showing your personality to others. And so bling out those canes if you want to.
Yes. Yeah. Paint your stumps, paint your leg braces, paint whatever it is you want. Use it.
Yeah, if you got a big mole on your face, tattoo around it. You do whatever. You do you.
I love it. Well, thank you so much, Alexis. It's been such a pleasure.
This was lovely.
Yes, we are going to put your links in the show notes, but can you tell everybody where they can find your amazing content?
Yeah, so if you just search Stump Kitchen on YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter, that those are the best places.
Awesome. Yeah. Amazing. Yeah. So nice to meet you. You have another follower now on your channel, so very cool. Thank you so much for what you do, and very cool.
Thank you. Thanks for having the conversations.
Thank you. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, Embracers. Thank you so much for listening and supporting the Embrace It podcast, brought to you by Launchpad 516 Studios, executive produced by George Andriopoulos, and hosted by Lainey Ishbia and Estella Lugo. Our music and sound effects are licensed through Epidemic Sound. Embrace It is hosted with Buzzsprout.
Do you have a disability-related topic you'd love for us to feature? Or could someone you know be a fabulous guest on our show? We would love to hear your comments and feature them on our next podcast. So leave us a voicemail, or you can even send us a text to 631-517-0066.
Make sure to subscribe to this feed wherever podcasts are available and leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts while you're at it. Follow us at @embraceit_podcast on Instagram. And make sure to follow all the great podcasts produced by Launchpad 516 Studios.
We hope you join us next time and continue to embrace it.